Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks a lot for listening to the show, tuning in to us each and every week. Each and every week, we bring to you news that you can use, hopefully. We talk a little bit about the economy, something about what's happening overall, not only here in the U.S., but around the world that might affect price on loans, might affect price on houses. Certainly, those two things are the most significant if you're looking for a house and you're frustrated because you can't find one. Anyway, that is what the show is about. I am Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. If you want to see this show, now we record this show in many different ways and places, but pictorially, the beautiful me can be seen on YouTube. Go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice on YouTube. Been there, hundreds of shows there, archive shows. Matter of fact, we have binge watchers on the Mortgage Voice, which always surprises me because I can't imagine seeing last week's, last month, or last year's show and getting anything out of it, unless you're looking at a perspective of long-term watching, which you can see the way the trends are going either in the mortgage interest rates, either in the economy itself, or in me. And all that together equals possibly some entertainment, but certainly some news that you can use. And again, we call some of our segments that, and the other we call interviews we have with different people, whether they're in the mortgage industry, whether they're in the real estate business, account executives, loan officers, real estate agents, really people who are on the ground there for you. I mean, this show is about helping you as the person who's trying to buy a house or sell a house or get the best mortgage rates possible. So we bring those people who deal with you directly. Why not? They're the ones that know. I've listened to all the great talk shows out there in terms of economics and what happens globally when we talk about either, you know, the interest rate, the Fed decisions, what's happening in terms of monetary policy, the Treasury Department, all these big topics that we do talk about. You can see on CNBC, you can see on Bloomberg, you can see on MSNBC, you can see on Fox Business Channel. They're all there, and they all give their own political spin on what exactly is happening economically. A couple weeks ago, we had some issues with we'll put out economic data on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, on a yearly basis. That economic data is how we base the show, is how a lot of people base their decisions. Certainly the Fed bases their decisions on the inflation, about how things are rising in terms of prices. All the decisions they make on whether they cut rates or whether they raise rates are based on that. Now, we have revisions, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, as I just said. Those revisions have come in a little different than the original estimation. So it calls into question the actual data itself. It's a problem, right? We live in a world today that depending on where you go for your information, is contradicting information from another source. It's annoying. It's not the way I was raised. And of course, I'm a dinosaur, so don't listen to me. But those outlets that you go to for your information, we tend to think economic information is immune to that. Well, if we have revisions on information that's definitely, you know, different or substantially different than what it was originally reported, well, that's going to add fuel to the fire that information in general is not reliable. So, long-winded way to say, welcome to the way things are done today. So you're out there and you're trying to find the house of your dreams, or at least a house you can afford. Only 37% of people who are looking for houses can afford to pay for the mortgage right now. It's one of the lowest levels we've had in the last few decades. It's not a good thing. It means that people who've been trying to buy a house, people who've been trying to get into the housing market, are still stuck renting. And one of the things that we talked about in previous shows, and we'll talk about it today with the revision of data, again, this revision of data from inflation, the inflationary data that came out a couple, maybe a week ago, week and a half ago, suggested that inflation was coming down, and it was coming down in all sectors, and it was good economic report. The revision report says, no, not so fast. It looks as if rentals, i.e. what they call the, they used to call it housing, now they call it, what do they call it, Daryl? They call it... Not housing, they call it unhoused. Well, that's what
The unhoused are the people that are...
Right, unhoused is what they call the homeless, but when they call... Anyway, this statistic, for instance, came in a lot hotter inflation-wise, which means simply that if you're out there and you're looking for a house and you can't find one and you have to continue to rent, it's going to cost you more money. 6.1% is the amount that it's going to cost you more this year than it did last year to get into that rental that was too expensive to begin with. And this is one of the problems in fighting inflation, is that you'll have a number of industries, a number of sectors that resist the lowering or the control of inflation. And because housing itself is not necessarily controlled in a typical inflationary way, housing is about simply, is there enough of housing? Are there enough places to put people who want to live here? We've had an unprecedented amount of people coming over the border. Let's say 6 million people over the last 3 years. It's a lot of people that need housing, right? Not everybody can sandwich into a shoebox with five families the way it was done back in the whenever. And then you also have a significant buyer population in the millennials who can't find a house that they can afford. As I said, 37% of the people who can buy a house can afford a house. Most of the rest of it, that'd be 63%, cannot afford a house, especially with rates the way they are. Now, the rates, let's talk a little bit about the rates, because that's as important as anything else in the housing equation. And this housing equation is impossible to fix without more of it. And one of the things that we notice when we talk about housing is everybody agrees, and I talked to somebody politically connected in New York City and talking about housing in general in New York City, and that there, as well as the country, people understand that housing is a major issue and that we don't have enough of it and that we have to build more. I think the president talked about it. I think anybody who's looking at a problem of, you know, overcrowding or overexpense or inflation in the housing sector is going to say we don't have enough housing. But nobody wants it in their neighborhood. That's what this political connection in New York was telling me. He said, look, in this particular neighborhood, and I forget what neighborhood it was, someplace in Brooklyn, they all understand there's this plot of land and we can, you know, revise the zoning to make it easier to build. But there's such opposition because nobody wants low-income housing. Now, what does low-income housing say to anybody in my listening sphere? What does it say to you? Does it say these are hardworking Americans who really just want a bite of the American? No, it's not saying any of that. It's saying some group that you don't like is going to move into your neighborhood and get cheaper housing because the federal government's going to pay for it. Well, how come the federal government's not paying for my house? How come the rates are so high? How come we have to help these people? These people aren't real Americans. You've heard it so many times. That's the NIMBY, not in my backyard, or the NIMBY, or whatever it is. So in the housing question, in the housing problem that we talk about in New York City, we could talk about right here in Los Angeles. There's a lot of kick around of these tiny house things, which I think are a great way to put people inside, but it's not a house that you're going to own and buy. It's a bed. It's water. It's a toilet. That's it. That's what you get when you go into these tiny houses. You don't get a way by which you can build on. You can live there. And most of these tiny houses are all in the temporary housing anyway. So in order to solve the problem, we need more housing. In order to solve the problem of getting more housing, people have to understand that it's in their best interest to put the housing in every neighborhood, not just your neighborhood, everywhere. But to get the political people or the people who vote on this stuff, I live in a small town, would never happen, never. It's so funny. The town voted to be a sanctuary city. But you can only be a sanctuary city if you've got places for people to stay there. That's why so much of this is just nonsense. What are you going to have somebody who is looking to get into your city because it's a sanctuary city, then invest in a $2 to $3 million house? Come on, that's not going to happen. So this problem is a broad-based problem, probably not going to be solved in today's show, but it just shows you how solutions to problems that are obvious to everybody do not have consensus to get the job done, which is quite typical in many areas of what we're trying to do here in Southern California. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I say that often and always on the show because we really do want to have you come and listen to what we have to say about housing, about mortgages, about your way to get into the housing market. We talk about some solutions at some point, but most of the time we just sort of present problems that are out there that you're well aware of, whether it's housing, whether it's inflation, whether it's employment, whether, you know, it's just your ability to be able to go to work every day, come home and not have additional costs to what you normally would do, whether it's your food or your gas or your energy bill at home, your gas and electric, or your mortgage payment, or whatever your rent might be paying. I get it, and I understand it, and please listen to the show. We're on each and every week. You can go to our website. It's themortgagevoice.com. You can go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. We have themortgagevoice.com, as I said, and we also are on a number of different podcasts. Daryl has a list of those. Daryl?
I sure do. It's Apple Podcast, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, PodClips.io, YouTube, as you mentioned, and also TheMortgageVoice.com.
Excellent. PodClips.io, great place, by the way. And I pitch these guys every week. Why? Because I love entrepreneurial talent that gets out there and tells people exactly what's happening. I'm on that podcast. There are a number of other people in health and lifestyle, in alternative dispute resolution. Those guys are great. If you're in a real estate contract or in some kind of mortgage dispute, they're the ones that try to help you understand what the industry is and how it works. So if you go to PodClips.io, download, listen, plug it in each and every week. You get a great education. I am Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. Okay, let's get right to a couple of things which I think are pertinent to the show called The Mortgage Voice. Mortgage rates, what are they today? And they have been going up. Everybody who's been watching is disappointed because we were thinking, we 6.5%. That was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We're going to go down. People were talking up, hey, maybe we'll get 5.5%, which, of course, in any market is a great loan. But we've seen the opposite happen, and we are at 30-year fixed-rate loans at 7.8%, 6.42% for the 15-year. FHA is at 6.43%. We've got jumbos at 7.35%. Ouch, that's a big number. 6.66% for the 5-1 ARM. The 2-year is at 4.645%, and the 10-year is at 4.312%. Both of those yields have come up, have gone back down, and have come back up again. Usually when yields rise, it means that the price on those particular bonds has fallen. People are about trying to be attracted to U.S. debt. And we talked a great deal about debt in the last show. Debt in itself is one of the things that we've been talking about on this show, just simply because what eats into the government's ability to do anything is the payment on, it's like your mortgage, right? You have to pay each and every month. Well, the debt is not amortized, and the amount that is owed is not fixed. The amount that is owed keeps going up. And in a rate environment where we have at core, the Fed has it at 5.25% to 5.75%, that means that whatever you have out there in terms of debt is going to cost you more if you're borrowing today. And certainly the government, the states, the municipalities, all these different things that we point at China and say, hey, this is why you're falling and this is why it's terrible for you. Well, be careful, because that's exactly what's happening here. One of the things that makes us a little bit different in China is we don't have the mortgage issues, and we don't have the demand problem whereby the real estate values in China have really fallen dramatically because the actual demand is not there because the Chinese consumer is really worried that these, whether it's the big developers who can't deliver on houses they've already promised and already collected mortgage money on, another difference that they collect mortgage money up front and continue to collect it before the house is even built. So there's a lot of issues with that. But here in the States, we have a commercial real estate problem in that 50% or so in some cities of commercial real estate space is empty. So what happens to that? Listening to Bloomberg today and listening to how they look at the problem, there's a company out there, and there's a bunch of them trying to figure out how to convert buildings from one set of uses to a different set of uses, i.e. office or business to residential. And they were saying that they're in their surveys, their particular calculations and how they look at things, one of the things they didn't do was tell you exactly how they make the calculations. I guess this was a big commercial for them. But they said about 50% are doable. About 25% of the commercial space is ideal for conversion. A lot of the older buildings, anything after 10 years old, 15, 20 years old, is really tough to convert. And that was why the figures aren't higher than 25%. But still, 25% does help and lead into the problem. But the problem for U.S. is that the default rate on loans for buildings that can't be converted is going to be high. And that's what compares to what's going on in China. And both of these things are not good for the world economy, because tying money up into something that can't be salvaged, i.e. why would I pay a loan on a building which can't be converted and can't be rented? Doesn't make sense, right? Right, exactly. So because of that fact, there's a great deal of worry in the commercial real estate space, and those banks, they say regional banks, but all regional banks bleed into the federal government anyway, right, as they do into major U.S. banks, the big five, as they call Bank of America, Citi, Chase Manhattan, I forget, what is it?
Wells Fargo,
thank you. And there's one other, I think it's Mellon or, yeah, one of those others. But anyway, all those people hold secondary paper to commercial paper being held out there by smaller or regional banks. Is a problem, will be a problem. So the U.S. debt, I'll just give you a last, I guess, thing to say about that on this particular show, U.S. debt. Elon Musk, Jamie Dimon, who is CEO of Chase Manhattan, Jerome Powell, as we all know, is the Fed chair, Brian Moynihan is the CEO over at Bank of America, unsustainable, $34 trillion in debt, $357 billion in interest payments per year. That is... Or maybe that's per month. I got so discouraged when I was reading, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, try to tell somebody who's working two jobs, their spouse is working two jobs, one of their older kids is working, can't go to college yet because they can't afford it, and they're trying to figure out how to piece together the monthly rent, which keeps raising, and yet these numbers are so astronomical that your head spins. You put your head down, you go back to work, and you hope it's all going to work out. Well, as we see in most cases, it doesn't work out. It just moves down the line in somebody else's problem on a different day. Anyway, those things are what we look at in terms of debt, with what we look at in the mortgage interest rates. Let's move on. Another use the use session. 3.1 million jobs added in 2023. That's pretty good, about 255,000 per month. Consumer spending and wage growth are some of the things that we talk about when we talk about inflation. Forecast by Moody's for 2024 will be 72,000 jobs added per month. That's quite a bit lower. I have a list here of five of the best states that jobs are plentiful and that they are growing. Nevada gained 3.8% in their jobs last year. Nevada is one of these enigmatic type areas where always worried about water there, always worried about the heat, always worried about expansion. Is it a good thing to put more and more people into the desert? However, it is the fastest and the most, secure place where you can go and find a job right now. So that's why a lot of people are moving there. Plus, it's a lot cheaper than Arizona, and it's a lot cheaper than California. Selling your house, moving to Vegas, yes, that's what's happening. Hey, that's why you're seeing the Super Bowl there. They've got a hockey team that won the Stanley Cup last year. Baseball team's moving there, although the mayor, and I don't know if anyone follows local politics in Las Vegas, So the current mayor is the old mayor's wife. The old mayor died and she took over. Nevada is a good old person network. I won't say good old boy because the mayor's female, but really it's a state that state legislature 4 months of the year. It's run by commissioners. It's still, you know, it's entertainment driven, even though a lot of what's happening in Vegas is trying to change that image, i.e. the sports teams. Anyway, Nevada, good place to go if you need a job sent. South Dakota, 3%. Idaho, 3%, Wyoming, 2.8%, and Texas, 2.7%. So if you see, this is in the south, southwest, and certainly up in the upper Midwest, if you're looking at South Dakota and Nevada. These are the five states I'd go to. Okay, anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us on a weekly basis out there at KCAA country at Inland Empire, Riverside and San Bernardino country counties. I really want to thank everybody out there, whether it's Fred or Mark or all the people in the engineering room that put us on each and every week. It's been a great partnership. We've been with them for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, and they constantly surprise and help. And so if you're out there and you're listening or you want great information, go to kcaa.com, and you can not only see and hear this show, you can hear all of their lineup, and everybody for archived sake is, you know, back 200 shows. So KCAA, they're great people, and thanks very much for listening. So let's go to our first guest of the show. I'm very happy. Nina Penny joins us again. Nina Penny is a reverse mortgage specialist. I've asked her to come on once again to the show to really explain what's going on in the reverse world, but give us a tour of what a reverse is and what kind of products there are out there. Nina, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You are an expert in this, so that's why I defer to you for all my reverse needs. And I appreciate you coming on the show. Tell me a little bit about what's happening currently in the reverse world. I think you mentioned off air the reverse seconds that they're doing. Tell me a little bit about that product.
Well, the reverse seconds is really great. You know, a lot of people got refinanced their homes when the rates were 2%, 3%, yep. And they love that rate. And they have a lot of equity in the house. And so they don't want to touch that great low rate that they have. So they're looking at getting HELOCs or second mortgages. Well, right now we have a reverse mortgage second.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it is that you leave your first mortgage in place. The reverse mortgage will give you an opportunity to tap into some of your equity. You're not obligated to make any payments on it. You can if you want, but it would be paid off at the time of when you sell the house or when the last person passes, it's due. And the great thing is that this loan is under 10%, just under 10%, okay, which is a great rate for a second mortgage, and even better if you don't have to make any payments on it.
Okay, so tell me how much money you can take out, what are the requirements to qualify for this loan, and obviously you have to figure in the first. So how do all those parts work together?
Well, first of all, to tell somebody how much they would have access to, it's not really possible.
Okay.
But it is based on the age of the youngest person. We go down to 55. Okay. So the older you are, the more money you'd get. So it's based on the value of the home, of course, the age, and of course the value. So if you have, you know, 80%, If your first mortgage is 80%, you won't be able to get that second.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you have good equity in the home and you're 55 and old, you can definitely get it.
Okay. So most people who are my age, which is older than 55, there are a lot of baby boomers have already paid their house off, right? So a lot of these people are looking to take advantage. Sure, they probably would like to get some money out, maybe, I don't know, help other people, help their kids, help their grandkids,
yep,
be able to go on vacation, even if they have medical bills or something like that. the primary reverse mortgage. Explain a little bit about that. What are the rates ranging at there, and how does that one work?
Okay, so the traditional reverse mortgage, of course, we have a jumbo product, and then we have a traditional HECM. These are not by any means your parents' reverse mortgage, okay? This is not that product anymore. So if you have a lot of equity in the house, and you think, well, you own it free and clear, and you think, hey, I would like a reverse mortgage, but the rates are high.
Right
now, the rates are, you know, between 6 and 7. It depends, of course. But let's say you don't really need the cash now, but you know that someday in the future you might. You just want a safety net or an additional bucket to tap into. This would be a great time to get that reverse mortgage. The reason why, the higher the rates, the higher is the growth rate attached to the line of credit. So that means that if you have money in your line of credit that you haven't pulled out, that amount will grow. So if your interest rate is, you know, 7.5, your amount in your line of credit would grow at 7.5. So today it's going to be growing, and you'll have more money to access later on in the future.
And that's regardless of the actual value when you do decide to pull the money out?
You know what? The value is only important on the day that the appraisal is done, because that's the number we work with.
You know, that sounds like a heck of a deal. You want to just run that by me one more time, because that sounded like money that you're saving without spending, and it keeps growing. This is like stock market money to me. If you're
you know,
gaining 7% a year.
Money.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. So you can just imagine, okay, let's say you own your house free and clear, right? And you're thinking, you know, I'm okay today, but maybe in 10 years, I don't have long-term care. I don't have, you know, I can always use an extra bucket, right?
Right.
And so you look at the reverse mortgage today, where the rates are higher, right? Just like anything else, the first few years are the most important years. So you don't need it today. But you look at it and you get a, you know, you have access to so much money. You don't touch it. You leave it in the line of credit. And we can show you an amortization schedule to show what that line of credit, how much that will grow. So you have an idea of what it might be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And, you know, at some point, if the housing market crumbles, which we don't anticipate it, but if it does, and you have more money in your line of credit, we will never cut it. You'll always have access to it.
That's a great hedge against the future unknown.
Yep. You know what? Even if you have more money in that line of credit than your house is worth, you can still pull it out. They will not cut it. That's unlike any traditional HELOC or any type of adjustable loan or any type of money fund out there loan that you can get. That is very attractive.
It's very attractive. And so, so at these interest rates, 6.5%, 7.5% in that range right now, obviously if the rates go down to 5, 5.5, the same would hold true. It just would be at a lesser rate, but you'd also be paying less. So, you know, if you're worried about the payment, which you don't make, it just gets taken off, but you can refi it. Now, what would happen if, in fact, you have money stored up and then you went and refied it at a lower rate?
Well, I mean, number one, the adjustable rate,
Yeah.
The adjustable rate, your rate goes down, so does, you know, if the interest rates go down, so does your rate.
Okay.
You don't have to worry so much about that.
Okay.
But let's say your house continuously accrues in value, right? And you look and you say, yeah, I want more money. Well, we can always look and see if it's beneficial to you. You know, if the rates are lower, maybe you can get a lower rate. But you know what? That's all something we have to look at the time. But yes, if the rates go up, if the rates go down and the values keep on increasing, you can refinance it.
Okay. This excellent information, by the way, these two different programs you talked about. Tell us something about the overall market. What is the reverse market like today versus when it was, you know, a couple, 3 years ago?
Well, you know what? I mean, unfortunately, of course, we're all, you know, impacted by the higher rates in this environment.
Yep.
However, people now are still using it. And basically, you know, if you sell your house and you want to go buy a new house, you don't want to use all your money because God knows what's going to be happening,
right? That's right, yeah.
So, you know, the reverse of purchase, we're seeing more and more people wanting to use a portion of their funds and use a reverse mortgage to cover the gap. So, you know, if somebody has a dream of buying, you know, a more beautiful home in their retirement, you know, they can do that with less money and keep some more in their pocket, which is very beneficial.
Absolutely. Nina, we're up against it. Let people know how they can get in touch with you, where you're working right now, and, you know, the best way that they can get you on the phone.
Great. Nina Penny, Malibu Funding. My number is 480-635-2410. They can also check out my website.
Right.
My website is simplereversemortgage.net.
Excellent. And you have a lot of great information on that website. Been there. It's really useful. And it also gives you a great intro as to what reverses are. Appreciate
you
coming
on.
Hey, Lena, thanks for coming on the show, as always.
Great to be back.
Yeah, great to be back. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Nina Penny of Malibu Funding. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Welcome back to the show. I appreciate you listening each and every week as we bring to you information about purchases, about refinances, about things that you're going to need to know if you're in the market to do that. Now, spring buying season is coming up. Yes, I know that's a traditional name that may not mean as much as it used to. Product is product, so if there isn't a lot of it, it's really not any different than any other season. But what we see is a bit of a hint that there may be some more product coming onto the market. We certainly haven't seen prices reduced, but in certain pockets around the country, prices have actually gone down as product increases. Can't speak today. But in order to do all that, you need a loan. And one of the people that we go to all the time to talk about loans in the marketplace, especially today's marketplace, when we've got interest rates that, I don't know what's happening. They're up, they're down. Anyway, from Nations Direct is April Lopez. She joins us now. April, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff Barton. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you very much. I do appreciate you coming on the show.
Yes, my pleasure.
Okay, so let's hit it right from the top. The market, what is happening with the interest rates? Where do you at Nations see it heading? Do you see a volatile sort of up and down year, or do you see an eventual landing somewhere in the sixes? What's going on with the rates?
Well, you know, today was an interesting day, very volatile.
Yep.
Inflation rates came out.
Yep.
And I think everyone is scared. So I think that the overall viewpoint is that it's just an overreaction today and probably throughout the week.
Sure.
And we should see it soften up. We were predicting last week that we should see come March or April that maybe we'll get an interest rate reduction and start, you know, getting into a softer landing through the summer. And, of course, by the end of the summer, we're hoping the interest rate should reduce.
Right.
We would say, you know, to the low sixes, high fives is what we're hoping.
Well, yes, that's music to my ears. I am hoping that, too. What are they saying now?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think what really, based off today, it's really kind of the mindset of the buyer today in a purchase market. So
mm-hmm.
it's so much, you know, with the volatility of the rates, now that everyone has, you know, has accepted that the rates have been high and that maybe they're just not going to increase anymore, but they'll level off. That really, what is the mindset of the buyer?
Mm-hmm.
So is it really, you know, rate at this moment? So I think if the market, we don't anticipate the rates, you know, skyrocketing anymore. We think it is going to flatten. And so I think that now the buyers, hopefully with inventory, maybe releasing a little bit more, that they're in the mode to buy because, you know, applications are high, they're up and increased.
So yeah, I saw that.
We think that the buyers are now just like, hey, we're ready to buy.
Yeah, and I think that's a matter of buyers looking around saying, hey, this may be as good as it gets. You know, I mean, in terms of getting into the marketplace, if we see rates drop a point, well, then you refi. But other than that, they may be here for a while. So if I want to get into the housing market, now's the time.
Well, 100%. And you know what I was sharing with everyone is that now that we've accepted the rates, don't wait, because guess what? 3 to 6 months from now, if you don't get in now with anticipation of maybe next year refinancing, that by the time you wait, then the values are actually, okay, when rates go down, values go up. The right. Sellers now have the holy grail again. And so now we're going to be in a competing market again, which actually we're starting to see multiple offers now rise. And then the buyers are going to wish they got in.
Right.
You know? So
the house
we're telling them,
right.
Don't hesitate.
Right. Okay. Programs. Let's talk a little bit about the programs. What's hot? What is being utilized more than others? Or is it in general, every product?
Well, you know, I would say that what's really hot now is going to be your government loans, your FHA and VA purchase loans that we're seeing a lot of, because the interest rates are still, lower than
right.
the conventional product, and the non-QM, the self-employed borrowers that have money, that are going to use bank statements or a profit and loss for income qualifying. We're seeing an increase of non-QM, non-qualified mortgage loans, which are for more of the self-employed borrowers that we find are using those products, and mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of that as well.
Okay, so when you're talking FHA, is that because the insurance buyers are getting into it because they want the insurance, or is that because their credit score is so bad it's all they could qualify for?
It's definitely because their credit scores are lower than the norm, and low down payments. Now they've come out with an FHA down payment assistant at 100% financing.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yes, and so mortgage because FHA lowered the monthly mortgage insurance to a more reasonable amount, it's now more appetizing for a new buyer to put less money down and go FHA.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And lowering that particular, and they're talking about lowering it again, aren't they? That's what I read. Maybe that's not true.
I haven't been up to speed on that. I didn't see anything, but mm-hmm. I mean, you never know. But I feel when they lower the month, I think the monthly might stay the same, and maybe they'll lower the upfront. Usually, when they lower the monthly, the upfront might increases. But I haven't heard anything as of yet.
Yeah. The FHA product, since they have raised this particular upfront and the monthly fee, has been pretty safe in terms of an investment, in terms of, a Ginnie Mae product being purchased on the market, in terms of the loans being closed. So I'm surprised that there haven't been more, initiatives by FHA, by HUD, to be able to include more borrowers. And one of the ways they did that is by lowering the monthly. But they didn't lower it by that much.
Yeah, they didn't. It was helpful, but not with the increase of values, especially on the West Coast, right?
Right. I mean,
so I agree.
Right. Fewer and fewer houses can be utilized for this FHA anyway, because it's way over the conforming limit, even in the jumbo.
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking in, say, Southern California, in this demographic, the average median house price, if you're buying, even if you go in the suburbs of a Palmdale, Lancaster, and you're buying a $450,000, $500,000 home, these FHA buyers are paying about $4,800,
wow.
$5,000 a month. And because homeowners insurance has skyrocketed too in California.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? And what is the political ramifications of that? I mean, if you can get into a house and afford a house, but it's the payment on the homeowners insurance that's killing you. Every area that I've been through or talked to or looked at in terms of loans in Southern California, they're either in a fire zone, a flood zone, an earthquake zone. So everybody is impacted by the rate raising. Everybody.
Oh, 100%.
I mean,
there's a lot of zip codes that have been blacked out,
right.
if you will, and they're not even allowing it. So you have to go to California Fair Plan, and I don't know if you heard, they were taking 2 to 3 weeks just to get a policy quote out.
Wow.
And then, your purchase transactions aren't closing. So Farmers is still riding in California.
Right.
And a couple, and obviously they're brokering out deals. They're just very costly.
How does Nations look at it when, these fair plans, they don't cover 100%. What do they cover, 85%?
Well, I don't know what the percentage is, but interesting enough is what they're offering with the fair plans is what's called a wraparound.
Yeah. Okay, I see.
To do the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, because it's only covering fire, right?
Right. That's right.
So, yeah. So with that, though, I find that it kind of falls through the cracks with most lenders if you're not local to California. A lot of lenders are missing the wraparound, which it benefits the client from a monthly payment perspective, but it doesn't benefit them from overall coverage. So I think once California starts realizing that it's only fire and they start analyzing it when claims increase, then they'll start insisting on the wraparound policies.
Well, they would have to. I mean, first of all, you have to have insurance. You just can't go without it because your life is ruined. If, in fact, something happens to the house and you got to pay, that debt doesn't go away. That's just, you know. So, yeah, some insurance issue has to be dealt with here, whether it's, you know, through legislation or, like you say, this wraparound policy, which, you know, I mean, I have a wraparound policy, but it's more about liability from somebody on the outside. If, you know, one of my kids got in a car accident and they came after us in the house, you know, you'd have to have an umbrella or a wraparound or whatever you call it in order to protect you beyond the regular coverage of your insurance policy. All of these are just protection, more of it.
Yeah, most definitely. It's just so costly to live here.
Yep.
You're finding more and more people. A lot of brokers in California are getting approved out of state because a lot of them are finding that more people are going out of state to buy, so they want to be able to expand their business.
Yeah, I totally agree. April, thanks for coming on the show once again. We always go to you because you're the best, and I appreciate you doing it.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Sure. Hey, listen, shout out a phone number by which people can get in touch with you if they have questions about some of the loan products you talked about.
Absolutely. April Lopez, 818-398-1272.
Excellent. April, thanks a lot once again for coming on the show.
Yes, my pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. That's April Lopez from Nations Direct. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the lending industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us on each and every week. We've been talking about a number of different things in the economy that might affect your decisions, your decision-making, in whether you're going to make a mortgage payment this month, whether you're going to put food on the table, and that's all about inflation. We had some tough news on inflation in terms of housing, and that drove the entire index up. 75% of the increase in inflation had to do with housing and housing in rental markets specifically. And that's not a good thing, especially since we have more need of housing. We have more need of rental housing than we've ever had. And these particular numbers are not encouraging. One of the things about inflation other than housing, and housing is strictly supply. We need more of it, but the builders won't build it. And because they won't build it, yes, we have less of it. We have ADU legislation here in Southern California, at San Bernardino Riverside specifically, as well as L.A. and Orange County and a bunch of the Southern California counties have. ADU is an alternative dwelling unit, and that's like a guest house, I guess you'd say. So if you wanted to do that, the state has mandated for all the counties and cities and towns around Southern California to be able to expand their use of ADUs or guest houses and to make it easier for people. But a lot of cities aren't. I live in a little town that fought it and still fighting it, got sued, and now is trying to work it out. But this is the drag your feet, don't do it. This is, as I said earlier in the show, not in my backyard. And it's horrible, it's awful, but without ADU aid, it's not going to happen. One of the things about, other than that type of inflation, is the overall inflation that's happened in the economy. And there's this fight between it's corporate inflation versus no, this is a supply chain issue, this is costs of things going up. And there is no entity that goes in and says, okay, that's a legitimate cost, you get to raise your prices by X. This is all done in the free market system of capitalism by the companies, by the people who make things, by the people who service you. This is all part of their calculation to make whatever money they can. Now, public companies versus private companies, yes, there are some reporting mechanisms in the public company sphere, but essentially raising prices can be hidden in many, many different areas. One of the things that we look at when we talk about inflation as a supply chain issue is, look, if everybody wants Tesla and there aren't any of them. There's five, and 10 people want it. Well, the price can go up because people will pay more for it because there's demand. But in such areas as services, commodities, commodities like gasoline, I've harped on this for forever, saying, wait a second here. Is it really a gas shortage, or is it really, I forget what they posted as a collective group last year in the energy sector, the oil companies making X amount of dollars, and then the trickle-down effect to everybody within the chain, whether it's the gas station owner, the truck delivery, the refineries, they all raise prices. And why is that? That is not necessarily a demand issue. Remember, 2-3 years ago during COVID, it was about we didn't have refinery capacity, or we shut the refineries down for maintenance, or the shale oil drillers decided to not drill this year. It was always some aspect that bothered me, still bothers me, because I don't understand it. I think most people who look at it go to the pump, say, okay, that's what I'm paying. It's less or it's more than last month, but you can cobble together the money to put gas in your tank and drive to work. I was in Missouri 2 weeks ago. Guess what the gas price there is? $2.50 a gallon. Okay? Well, when was the last time you saw $2.50 a gallon here in California? Yeah, exactly. You can't remember that long ago. So there are a lot of different aspects of inflation. Part of the inflation story is government tax. Why is California taxed 75 cents per gallon by the state, and then the local municipalities, the counties, they all get in on raising the price of gasoline at the pump. Why? Because that's the way California makes its money. Everybody drives in California. Everybody's got 2 or 3 cars in California. I mean, it's the type of thing whereby if it was to reverse, services in California would go down the dump. Now, we all complain about potholes in the road. I get that. But how many people complain about housing? How many complain about food that they put on the table, or other segmented elements of the economy that are subsidized by the state? Only those people who are affected directly by that are going to like it. Everybody else is going to say, why are we doing that? So again, these parts of inflation have nothing to do with supply and demand. Saw John Stewart the other day. Love when he goes after companies. Went after Walmart, $16 billion in profits, yet 75, I forget what the percentage was, but it was close to that. There was a huge percentage of Walmart workers who have to take government subsidies in the terms of welfare or food stamps. I don't know what they call them now. It's EDT. Is that what they call it? Okay. So Stewart put it to the CEO of Walmart and said, wait a second here. Why are we subsidizing Walmart? You made $16 billion, and yet your employees come to the government because they don't make enough money to be able to afford to eat. Why isn't that calculated into the overall aspect of capitalism versus what's fair and right? Now, I think there's a calculus here to do the right thing and make money in a capitalist country. Same thing that I forget who was talking about drug prices the other day. It's just ridiculous. They talked about the 560% increase on a particular drug for blood cancer. I forget which blood cancer it was, but that it would cost somebody something like $125,000 a year to be on this drug to save their life. And the counter argument is, well, it allows this type of profit to be able to research other drugs and to be able to, you know, offer different solutions to people who might not normally have the option to be able to even buy it at $125,000 a year. There's got to be a better way. Sorry. The inflation thing, yes, there is supply and demand issues. No, corporate greed is way beyond what we think it is. And I think that's true across the board in many aspects. So this guy, who is this guy? This guy is just, I don't get political, but he was on Fox News, and he was talking about the, what was he talking, where is it? I can't get to it, I don't know where it is right now. Anyway, he was talking about the ills of, not capitalism itself, but the ills of the media and the way they depict how corporate greed has affected inflation. And again, it's a political show, right? It's Fox News. It's like watching MSNBC. Again, another political show. You can't watch these things. But what you can do is understand that what you're paying for at the pump is not what I'm seeing in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, California has oil and our own refineries, and it's still $6 a gallon. Missouri, who's frozen under the snow, they have $2.50 a gallon. There's something wrong here. And not to see it as a combination of ineptitude and inflation, not by supply and demand, but by greed. Yeah, that's really what's happening here. Okay, let's get to a couple of other things before we close out this particular segment. Oh, okay, this is kind of humorous. Where is that? Oh, Where is it? Oh, here it is. Okay, so when you get to a certain age, there are certain things you should and shouldn't do. One of the things that struck me a couple weeks ago, I didn't get to it last week, was when you're 50 years old, things you shouldn't be doing. And these will, I'll just run through the list. It's humorous, it's silly. Some of it's, you can think about. Okay, neglecting your mental health. Yes, you should not do that in your 50s, you know, whether you should do that ever. But this is one of the things that they talked about. Smoking. Okay, who smokes? Do you know any, Daryl? Do you know one person that smokes?
Yeah, I'm afraid there's a bunch.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know anybody. I guess I'm just an old...
I don't really hang out with anybody.
And if you smoke, I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend, but come on. Stop smoking. Okay.
It's not like they didn't know.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think the pack of cigarettes says, this will kill you tomorrow.
Pretty much, yeah.
And it basically still doesn't stop. I'm not going to get to any of these. Ignoring ailments, stuck in the past, legal docs, neglected update, underestimating recovery time, dating much younger people. Oh, yeah, that'll kill you right away. Anyway, these are the things you can't do in your 50s. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening to the show. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.